in what is arguably the least surprising development of the recent terrorist uprising on US campuses. Columbia University is has announced that they're still not going to let the police in to on campus. The president is being criticized for being too well, not friendly enough to the terrorists. And yeah, this story is developing as we would expect it to develop in Colombia, considering the approach of that university. And of course, we saw what happens when terrorists are actually being treated as terrorists, when the police is involved in doing their job. But yeah, none of this is the case in Colombia. James, you've been on one of the shows when we were discussing this, but we have been discussing it every day. Of course, it's an ongoing news story. So, any thoughts on the recent developments or anything else since last time you were on?
Well, sorry that my health didn't permit me to join on earlier discussions this week. I'm feeling much better, though. And I have been full of all kinds of comments brimming over in my head about this. I have to say that I'm relatively pleased at what's happening at other universities. Certain other universities in the United States have been handling this, I think, in a far more appropriate way. You had a great clip on one of the shows this week of what happened at Emory. The professor who's claiming, I'm a professor, as if she has some entitled position to it. I think that really gets to the heart of the matter. Academia today, and the higher up in the academic world you go, USC and Emory and maybe the University of Texas, they're handling this in a good way. So what's the dysfunction over at Columbia? The dysfunction over at Columbia is not outside agitators, which I think there's partly an issue of, nor is it the students who are relatively ignorant compared to their professors. I think that the real problem is the professors. And they recall that if several weeks ago, 100 Columbia professors signed on with this, oh, well, October 7th has to be contextualized. Protests are appropriate here. With that, those are the professors who should. There's a, I hope Daniel includes the link, an article that was published yesterday or the day before in the Washington Post by a leftist professor, mind you, decrying what's going on. And he properly blames, even though he's on the left, he properly blames the professors at Columbia as being the ones confused here. We've been told for decades now by the left that words can be violence and triggering, and that bricks thrown at cops can be free speech. The left has no clue of what rights are. I urge everyone to go read Ayn Rand's article on man's rights and the nature of government, her other article on the nature of government. Those articles will explain to you what rights really are. And then, of course, Ayn Rand's articles on the student rebellion of the 1960s, which you guys cited in earlier episodes, is also valuable. The student rebellion, the cashing in. Your right to free speech does not include the right to violate the rights of somebody else. Speech is speech. Violating someone's freedom of movement is not free speech. Threatening someone is not free speech. Blocking people is not free speech. Your free speech does not give you the right to violate someone else's rights. Speech is speech, and coercion against individuals, innocent individuals. Why are they picking universities? Why are they picking universities except to intimidate Jewish students, except to claim some kind of intellectual legitimacy? But the thing that underlies all of this is the left doesn't have the first effing clue as to what free speech is and isn't. And so they think this is valid protests, and that if we don't, if we would ever drive out these encampments from the Columbia campus, that would somehow be a violation of their right to protest. Nonsense.
So, yeah, Colombia's president Minush Shafik has been criticized in some places, like on this channel. She's also been criticized by the Colombia Senate for different reasons. Now, just for a bit of context on who this woman is, I think we should play this clip that we played a few days ago. The video wasn't great. I think the audio was good enough, but just yeah, let's play that again. This is her speaking a long time ago about 9/11.
So it's not, you'll always have individuals who will have extreme views, But what's really troubling in the region is that there's actually quite a broad base of society which has some sympathy for the terrorists, not so much because they approve of their methods, but it's a form of protesting against a system which is not delivering for them on the economic or the political front.
So, I guess she would be criticized by some in the left, even on that, for calling them terrorists. But she explains that, maybe some people don't exactly agree with the murder of 3,000 citizens on 9/11, but they understand that this is a form of protest against whatever their economic and political situation is, which, you know, is I think we could probably do a show that will last several hours just deciphering those ideas. First of all, why are you attacking America? And of course, they would have an answer. The left would have an answer on why, if you're not happy with the economic situation in Saudi Arabia, why you would attack America. But that's just for, just to understand who we're talking about before we go into what the Colombia Senate said. But James, any thoughts on that?
She could open her mouth to articulate justifications for 9/11 and the slaughter of thousands of innocent civilians. That tells you who she is, that there could even be some justification for it. Well, we hear it now after the horrors of October 7th, after the sadistic atrocities on October 7th. We have people telling us, and like those 100 Columbia professors several weeks ago, well, it's a broader context of, occupation that we have to take into account. Bull! There is no way you could justify October 7th, whatever your cause. There is no way you can justify 9/11, whatever your cause. And instead of pointing out that what must be the evil motives of people behind this, they mouth these excuses for that. And in conjunction with their confused view of what free speech and what a valid protest would look like, it creates this perfect storm where somehow the victims are the ones who are being driven off of Columbia's campus, even though they're the ones trespassing, obstructing regular business, threatening Jewish students as they go by, and really horribly saying things. If you open your mouth to say something like Intifada and you don't know that it involved suicide bombers attacking and killing children, and you open your mouth to say worldwide Intifada now, okay, the students, maybe if they've been taught and propagandized by their professors, have some quasi excuse, I suppose, but not to open their mouth about it. It's these professors that are encouraging them on, egging them on, and telling them that that is the truth, that's the real cause here. Now, it's true, as I say, there are outside agitators. There's got to be some coordination here from some suspicious money. But the good news is that other universities in America are not being quite so conciliatory to monsters as Columbia is.
Yeah. So first of all, we don't know that they don't know what Intifada means. I think it's probably safe to assume, but let's give them, I don't want to call it the benefit of the doubt. Let's assume that they know, understand to some extent the words that are coming out of their mouth. And of course, if they don't, they are still guilty of spewing those ideas. There's one video I saw. Maybe I'll try to find it and see if we can share it, of them talking about burning down Tel Aviv and so on, and speaking in favor of rockets. So, do they not know what that means? I'm pretty sure they do.
Did you hear the leader of the student protests at Columbia speak? He actually said that killing Jews is okay. The killing of some Jews in this context is perfectly appropriate because they're the oppressors, they're the bad guys, and so killing Zionists is a-okay.
Yeah, this is the one who said he wants to kill all Zionists or something like that, and then he apologized, but he was kicked out of Columbia, which is...
Well, that's the guy.
But
he was the guy who was leading and organizing this movement at Columbia. And he absolutely said, point blank, Zionists should be killed. Under many circumstances, it's perfectly appropriate to kill Jews. He said both things. He said supporters of Israel and Jews should be killed.
Are you sure? Are you sure you're not misgendering him? Is he indeed a guy? Did he?
Excuse me. He said that his pronouns include they. So perhaps I should be referring to him as a they. But he does wear the PLO, the kafifa, the correct head garb for it, so we know what side he's on. He advertises it. Yeah.
And okay, so let's I'm going to read from this article from The Independent, which is a left-wing newspaper in the UK. Columbia University's Senate has called for an investigation into President Minouche Shafik and members of her administration amid the ongoing protests on campus over the Israel-Gaza war. The Senate voted on Friday to approve the resolution and accused the administration of violating established protocols, undermining academic freedom, and breaching the due process rights of both students and professors, according to the Senate's resolution addressing current events seen by The Independent. Ms. Shafik has faced heavy criticism for her decision to allow the New York Police Department to disperse protests on the campus, resulting in the arrest of more than 100 students and sparking similar protests across the US. So basically, this woman who is allowing this to happen and not allowing the police to fully do their job is criticized for what, allowing them to do some of their job.
Well, but see, this is exactly what I was talking about. They are intentionally destroying the concept of actual free speech. They're intentionally destroying the concept of what a right to express yourself or a right to peaceful protest might involve. You don't have a right to mass protest, not if it involves stuff like this. And they are intentionally obfuscating that, as if academic freedom could ever properly involve violating the rights of someone. Could ever properly involve any kind of violence, threats, or obstructing of pathways and obstructing of business. It cannot. And they are on purpose confusing this concept. And consider, it's the bad guys here are it's a world of terrible moral inversion. The bad guys here are the ones who are trying to stop and destroy Hamas. Okay, they're the bad guys. All righty. That is a moral inversion on the substance of the point, which is, really, really disturbing. They're out there not only confusing people about free speech, they're confusing people about good guys and bad guys as such, justifying this as occupation or genocide or what did Ilhan Omar, the congresswoman from the United States, call it the other day? You have to decide whether you're on the side of freedom or on the side of genocide. And to her, that's it. If you support Israel, you're on the side of genocide. And that's the kind of moral confusion that is layered into this, I have to say.
We were talking yesterday about how the word genocide has become all these people can actually say for the most part. They don't try to make arguments anymore if you are on the side of, oddly enough, the people who are trying to defend themselves from an actual genocide. You are guilty of genocide, and there is no need to go further into argument. By the way, Ilhan Omar, in one of those videos, was seen meeting and shaking hands with those person you mentioned that said that all Zionists should be killed. Daniel says here in the Zoom chat that according to a 2016 poll, 90% of Israeli Jews consider themselves somewhat Zionist or very Zionist. So,
So who's on
I
the side
don't.
of genocide here? Yeah, those folks saying, I mean, the guy there who's leading the original leader of the Columbia thing, he's actually articulating a kind of genocide. Kill Jews and kill Zionists. Okay, that would be genocide. That would mean the wiping out of 8 million Jews in Israel. Okay. And they know that Hamas is the real genocide, ones who are explicitly after genocide. They know that, and they know this reversal of concepts is going on, but they need and require this reversal of concepts. It's built in. But yeah, the use of the word genocide is explicit. And let me just say right here, in her defense of Hamas, Congresswoman Omar is in fact the defender of genocide. She has made up her mind. She is the defender of genocide. And if she would you want to take me to court for defamation, I'd be happy to take her on in court on that. She is calling for genocide. She is a defender of the horrors of October 7th and Hamas. And I invite her to take me to court for defamation.
I would like to live stream that trial here on this channel.
Well,
And I'm hoping you will be representing yourself because that's I'd like to see you in action there. Thank you, Bonnie, for the super chat. Inger says you don't have to go along with the pronouns if you don't believe in it. Yeah, we don't have to, but it's funny. So why not? So you know this independent article that I'm reading from is a is an interesting case study in itself because it shows again this is a major left-wing newspaper in the UK, I guess, of the so-called broadsheets. It's the second biggest left-wing newspaper after The Guardian. I'm not sure in terms of readership, maybe in terms of prestige. So I'm going to read a bit more because it gets interesting afterwards, more in terms of how they choose to report. The Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, visited Colombia on Wednesday and called on Ms. Shafiq to quit if the protests are not brought under control. He was met with a chorus of boos. And then they move on. So yeah, the fact that he was this is one paragraph on him being there. Being met with a chorus of boos. Yeah, you know, if people who support the mass murder, the torture, the rape, the burning alive of Jews, the taking of hostages of ages 6 months to 80 something, I don't remember how old the oldest person taken was. If those people boo you might be doing something right, you know,
A
but
badge of
that's not.
honor. It's a badge of honor. And the Speaker of the House, I'm not always a fan of the Speaker. You know, there aren't a lot of members of Congress I support, but he did one brave, darn brave thing there, it seems to me. He went there and faced down a crowd, knowing he would get all those boos from a bunch of irrational defenders of violence. He at least knows the good guys and the bad guys, and you know, was willing to stand up to them, face those boos. And rather than saying, hey, he courageously stood up to them in a way that the president of the school could not courageously stand up to them, they just say boos, as if, you know, truth it can be determined by a collective opinion poll and among that crowd.
Yeah, now they move on after that paragraph, but it still gets even more interesting. So the story continues. Both Jewish students and students expressing views supporting Palestinians have reported harassment leading to safety concerns on campuses. And then it continues. The student protests in the US have now inspired demonstrations elsewhere in the world, including in Paris, where protesters occupied the Sciences Po campus on Friday. But yeah, this is another one of those, you know, both Jewish students and those supporting the Palestinians have expressed harassment. Yeah, one side is harassing the other, and the other doesn't want to be disturbed while harassing and intimidating, and again, videoing it, much like the speaking of inspiration, they take inspiration from their heroes in Hamas in videoing themselves, going after the Jews, attacking them, shouting at them, you know, Yahud, which is Jew in Arabic. There's one video of somebody bragging about punching, and there's a video of somebody punching an Israeli. Or somebody from the pro-Israel side. So yeah, one side is being attacked, and they do the both sides thing here and say, well, both sides have reported harassment.
And don't you understand that last night's March for Israel that was done at Columbia, or was it last night or the night before, where they set up candles and they, in the Star of David image, they did so quietly, peacefully. They left, they had permission. It was, from what I understand, there were no threats except against them. And once they set up the candles in the shape of the Star of David, there were screaming protests calling for worldwide intifada and from the river to the sea, marching all around them. Now, which was threatening? A quiet candlelight vigil on behalf of Israel, or the screaming threats of intifada and mo continued violence against Jews and Zionists that was going on around it? That's just a factually incorrect description. You know, as I pointed out many times, even before October 7th, something like 60% of all the hate crimes in America are the victims are Jews. They are only 1 point something percent of the population, as opposed to 12 point something percent of the population, say, for African Americans. And yet, 60% of the hate crimes before October 7th were directed against Jews. Now, since October 7th, the number of reports against hate crimes against Jews has gone up hundredfold, more than a hundredfold, by many, many times. And contrarywise, the threats of the Islam, quote, and I'm going to put that term in quotes, air scare quotes, Islamophobic type threats have not had experienced that kind of change. No, there is a systematic problem of anti-Semitism, threats against Jewish students, threats against visibly Jewish people just on the streets of New York, mind you, that is distinct and needs to be called out for the factual thing that it is. The threats are on one side pretty much these days. That's where the problem is. And that failure to identify that is really disturbing. It itself is a defense of Hamas and what happened on October 7th.
Yeah, and we talk on this channel about how these ideas kind of trickle down to the people who can the best way they can articulate it is by saying Israel is committing genocide if they actually put it in a full sentence rather than just chanting that it's genocide. But the reason I thought it's important to read some of this independent article is because this is one of the places where the ideas come from is the media and the way the media chooses to report. And of course, the universities, as we saw yesterday in Emory, two professors were arrested, including the head of the philosophy department. And another one who we showed the video was when she was being arrested, shouted repeatedly, "I'm a professor, I'm a professor." Like, how is this even possible that a professor who obstructed police work is actually being arrested for doing that? And again, these ideas do trickle down. And so one of the things I'm seeing now in this independent article, there's key points, and then I click the link and it leads to something else. But one of the key points is Jewish student protesters say Colombia's pro-Palestine demonstrations aren't anti-Semitic. Which is, you choose to you choose a headline like that based on maybe you interview a couple of students and they say that there are token Jews in these demonstrations who are both sides are both sides within that demonstration, the Jews, the token Jews and the anti-Semites are happy to have those token Jews, but to choose to report it that way is it's consistent with the way they choose to report things from Gaza. They choose to report from Gaza by showing rubble, by showing somebody crying about a dead loved one, by talking about numbers of dead. They don't mention the hostages. They don't mention the reason this war was started. They don't mention the Palestinian people being united behind the murder of Jews, completely. They don't mention the fact that there is no opposition to Hamas within Gaza, as there is in every dictatorship where you actually can argue for something better to come along instead of it, that doesn't exist there.
And
This is not a part of the reporting.
that's why they make the distinction, don't you know, Razi, between Jews, because we have these token Jews over here who will take our side, and Zionists who believe in the state of Israel. Now, what does that mean? Every person living in the state of Israel who's Jewish. So if you support the state of Israel and live in the state of Israel, you're a Zionist and should be killed. And you see this distinction? It's really important that we draw this distinction between those Jews who are over there, like Professor Finkelstein, who hate Jews and would be perfectly happy to see millions of Jews killed in the Middle East, and Zionists, don't you know, supporters of the state of Israel. And so those of us who support the state of Israel, we're on the target list. That's A-OK. Because if that involves killing 8 million Israeli Jews, they're Zionists, you see. They're not just Jews, Razi.
Yeah, Davy Boy says in the chat there are a few capos who support the jihadis. Early on, I think it was in October, maybe November, we had an episode. I don't remember the title of it, but I think it was something like Jews for Hamas or Jews for Palestine, and we had a picture of a capo as the thumbnail with a kind of a armband with a Hamas logo, and I later thought about that, and I thought, you know what? Not to be defending capos, but it's unfair to capos. Capos were were in concentration camps and had a gun against their head. These people are living in the freest country in the world, and they choose voluntarily to side with the people who say that they want to finish the job that Hitler started. So, again, this is
I'm
not
hearing things
intended.
like Final Solution. I'm reading them on signs. I'm reading hearing things like Gas and Juice from people. I never thought that I would hear such chants in America in my lifetime, and I am, and I am. It is so disturbing. It's truly frightening, I have to say. I've not heard this kind of openly and this kind of openly expressed hatred being justified, being given some kind of moral justification by universities. So why is it universities? Because that's the source of the intellectual corruption here, and they want to intimidate Jewish students. Why would you pick university? It's not as though Columbia and NYU are particularly invested in Israel. And you know those girls on the street who came down from Columbia to the NYU protest who had no idea. So what has NYU done? What are you protesting? They didn't have the first clue what was going on. It's not the universities. If anything, the universities are the centers of opposition to Israel. They're the ones in America who are much worse than the ordinary American when it comes to supporting Israel. So why would you focus on universities as your enemy if you're pro-Palestinian? They're your friends. They're where the Jewish students are. They're where our intellectual defenders are. That's where it's going to be sensitive, where the Columbia president and the Columbia Senate can't kick us out because they don't know what free speech is. They'll be sympathetic to our motives anyway. It's exactly what's happening.
Yes, and as we saw from the especially in the episode where we discussed Columbia students in their own words, and we showed that clip of those two girls. We also read from their manifesto. They very well know that Columbia is a university that won't stand up to them and won't let the police stand up to them. And the police in New York, even if they were allowed in, would probably not. We won't see scenes like we saw from Emory or like we saw from UT Austin. Yeah, they chose the easy target, and look, they did inspire a movement across universities. We are seeing that. We are going to continue covering it. We're going to talk about some specific universities, I think, in the days to come, and talk to some of the students from there. But yeah, this is this is something that much like the terrorists that these people support, there's a way to end this and there's a way to embolden it. And what we're doing now is unfortunately the latter.
Yes. Well, it seems to me these people are running very close to something where I wouldn't call it free speech at all when they give aid and comfort to a currently violent, warring enemy of an ally of the United States. Now, the United States has not made it clear, as clear as they should be, that these people are, in fact, enemies of the United States, military enemies. Even though we're not necessarily involved in the attack on Hamas, we are supporting Israel in their war against Hamas. And if that's clearly the case, then these people, are in effect aiding and abetting are enemies of the United States here in the United States, even if they're just doing so ideologically. I think there are limits to, quote, free speech when that is the context, by the way, especially if you're going around threatening visibly Jewish people. Some Hasidic Jewish man walks down the street and you're threatening him and threatening his nation and threatening his old people as he's just walking down the street, or violently assaulting or standing in the way of Jewish students. The number of different stories that I've heard are absolutely horrifying. The terror that many Jewish students are reasonably in fear of now at the great American universities is inexcusable. And our government's failure to address this properly, I think, has really become an issue now. It's not just the president of Columbia, Baroness, what's her name? She's obviously in the tank for terrorists, but it's Joe Biden and his weakness on this whole topic that is distressing to me as well.
Thank you for referring to her by her British official title, Baroness. What's her name? We appreciate that. And yeah, Matthew Humphries, who is on who appears on this channel, he we've told a story of him on three different occasions that I've heard of from him walking down the street in London, And he's not Jewish. He's Welsh, and he's a lawyer, and he dresses up, and he has a beard, and he, if you don't know what a Hasidic man looks like, you could assume that he's Jewish, and that's what people did on three different occasions, and shouted at him, "Free Palestine," and or similar slogans. And yeah, if people ask you how is Free Palestine anti-Semitic, I think that's a pretty clear indication of how. Thank you, John, for the super chat. John says, "Unfair to capos. Ha! Thanks for a genuine LOL moment. Great discussion, gents. Thank you for that." And James, any parting words before we wrap up?
No, I just want to urge, as I've done more than one on more than one occasion, please be safe. Be safe, my friends. That is the most important thing out there. We are living in very disturbing times. We're living in times where people do not understand what rights are, what free speech consists of, and they're thinking in collectivist terms, so that if they perceive you as Jewish or Zionist, you are in danger. So be careful out there, my friends. Be careful. It is a scary world out there right now.
Robin says in the chat, "I got called a Jew simply for simply being here." Well, I think James and I have the power to officially anoint you an honorary Jew, so congratulations for that. All right. Thanks, James. Thanks everybody for joining us. We're back tomorrow with the Daily Objective and with a reality show extra for YouTube members. That is an episode, a weekly episode of the reality show. It is members only. That is a bit lighter than the regular episodes. And we have other perks if you're a YouTube member, including the History of Philosophy study group, which is run by James, and that is tomorrow as well. So there's a lot of content for YouTube members. There are also emojis. There was a James Valiant emoji. If you didn't know that, you should become a member and
Hey.
use it when James is on, and even when he's not on, you can use it whenever you want. Thanks, everyone. We'll see you tomorrow.